Touchdown Tampa Bay. You're listening to the PewterCast.
Welcome to the PewterCast. I am Brent Allen, your host, joined as always by my good friend, Ren. I got myself some new gear, Daxed. Ren, what's going on, buddy?
Do I sound different?
You do. You sound great. In my headphones, anyway, you sound great.
Do I sound more important?
You do. You sound more like, you know what, to me, and I don't know if anyone else out there is ever going to pick up on this, but you sound more to me like you're sitting in the room with me than I've heard you, I think, ever on this podcast.
Well, that's because I got some new gear. I don't know. Brent, thank you. I thanked you on Twitter, but I'm going to thank you now. I'm also going to warn you, I'm not getting you anything for Christmas, so thank you for my Christmas gift.
Thank you.
You sent me a text the other day like, hey, what's your address? And I'm like, I sent it out and I didn't ask questions. And then you're like, hey, look out for a package. And then it came and I had a sneaky suspicion because mm-hmm. I talked about getting some new headsets, earlier in the year.
I'm pretty sure once a show this particular year, you've asked me if I was going to make you get a new headset.
Did I?
I think it's been about, you know, maybe not quite that frequency. But yeah, it's been, we've talked about it for the year, for sure. For sure.
So anyway, I open up, I get the, new headsets, so I sound different. It goes into this little maroon box that got lights and knobs on it. So I plugged everything in, and here we go. I guess this is more my true sound.
Yeah, I think so. And it certainly your gear, the gear that we have here in the studio in my part of the side of it, just trying to bring it all better, upgrade the whole situation. So, hopefully you guys, enjoy the dulcet sounds of Ren Dax as if he was sitting in a room with you, not so processed as it typically is. But anyway, Ren, we're not here to talk about gear and all the behind the scenes stuff here with the PewterCast.
No, we are not.
Here to talk about Buccaneers, and we got a great guest who is, going to be on the show with us. He's been on with us a few times before. I think this is only the second time this year. Greg Allman of The Athletic is in to talk with us. Pro Bowl selections came out this week. Bucks are on a 4-game win streak. Lots to talk about, but Greg's joining us this week.
Yeah, always, he's the best. We just had Pless on, and Pless called him the Merlin, the Wizard, whatever high accolade you want to pour onto Greg Allman. Pless was like, yep, that's him. It's Allman. Yeah. Like, doesn't matter. Who's King Arthur Armin is? Who's Merlin? That's Armin. Okay.
Who's Guinevere? Yeah.
Armin. Best looking too. Yeah, triple threat. Triple threat go. Greg. So we got triple threat Greg coming off The Athletic. Like you said, we talk about the Pro Bowl. We do talk a little bit about Jameis. We talk about the Texans game coming up. And as always, it's when you get these guys that are, experts on the team, it's just a really good conversation that goes about three times as long as we expect it to and tell them that it's going to be, let's jump off like 15 minutes and then,
it's 45 minutes later.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well,
and this is also, it's a guy who's in the building and he's around the locker room. He's around, certainly the media room, but he's around the coaches and everybody like that. And it's just great to get to hear from that. So guys, we're talking to Greg Allman today. We're going to catch up with him about the Bucs 4-game win streak, Pro Bowl selections and all that kind of stuff. Plus later on, we're going to get to some emails. We got some iTunes reviews to read. And all of that is going to be what's coming your way this week on the PewterCast. If you've been listening to the show for longer than, say, I don't know, a week, then you already know that our sponsor this year is huntakiller.com. Lots of you have reached out to say how much fun you've been having playing this game, and that's awesome. But if you haven't checked out Hunt a Killer yet, there's no better time than right now. If you subscribe now, not only will you get the monthly box that contains the next batch of clues for solving the mystery and catching the killer, which is what the game is really all about, for a limited time, you're also going to receive the official Hunt a Killer
Killer cocktail book so that you and your friends can mix up a few drinks while you guys are hot on the trail of the killer. And along with the cocktail book, you're also going to receive a set of Moscow Mule cups. And you'll get those free with a 6 to 12 month subscription. Just go to huntakiller.com, sign up for your choice of subscription, and use the code PewterCast at checkout to receive 20% off your first order. Now listen, if you're like me and you don't want to wait a month between each box, you can actually order the entire mystery in a premium box and get the whole thing at once. So guys, again, just use the code PewterCast at checkout to get 20% off plus those freebies at huntakiller.com.
Hey, I'm going to ask you this question, Greg, and I don't want to surprise it on you in case you don't know, but I think you're going to know. It's, you know, it's one of the reasons I wouldn't ask probably anybody else but maybe Scott Smith this question. Do you know the difference between a franchise tag and the transition tag?
You know, I don't think I do. I think one is the difference of the – one is the average of the top five at the position. One is the average of the top 10 at the position maybe. Is that the difference?
I don't know. I was going to ask you because I hear since the CBA is coming up that like – sort of the transition.
You can like use
tag.
Both?
Yeah. Like people are sort of using the transition tag as like double franchise tag this year. Like
yeah, I've heard that. And I don't know if that's the plan or not. It's like, you know, they've obviously with Jameis and with Barrett, they have to decide between the two of them, you know, which, if any, you need a franchise and who you're more likely or happier to get either on a one-year deal or on a multi-year deal. It's tricky because in theory, you know, what Shaq Barrett's done is less proven. So to me, there's some value in giving him a one-year franchise. And like, because right now, I mean, people are thinking that it might be close to the cost of the franchise tag for a pass rusher to keep Shaq Barrett. So if you were worried like this could be a fluke year or maybe, you know, the real Shaq Barrett is closer to who he was in Denver and not here for some reason, then maybe you would be better off giving him the franchise. And if a year from now you still see 15 sacks out of him or something, then you go ahead and go with a long-term extension then. You know, Jameis is a little bit different because the market on a quarterback is probably a little bit harder to know. You know, all it takes is two other teams out there that want him as their quarterback, and that can get really expensive really fast. So yeah, I'm intrigued that I don't know the answer to what you said or the right answer for what the Bucs will do to answer both of those questions kind of before things get going hot and heavy in free agency in March.
Well, just so you guys know, a quick Google search, if I'm reading that right, basically is the transition tag allows the player to talk with other teams, and then the home team gets like right of first refusal, like they can match the offer,
right.
Versus a franchise tag doesn't. Like if I'm reading it right, that's what it seems. But other than that, they seem to be similar. I didn't see anything about a difference in salaries.
I can't say,
but you
I
could
can't
be
say
right
that I can
that.
Remember. Yeah, I don't know that I remember the last time a transition tag was used.
Lie to us, Greg. Neither. When would you say it would be? Just completely make it up.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't remember a public use of the transition tag in recent years. Like I said, franchise, and I mean, it's tricky because like there's even that issue of whether Barrett would count as a linebacker or a defensive end.
Right.
It has to do with are you spending more snaps with your hand in the ground or up as a linebacker? And I think he'd be getting the defensive end money, which is higher. I think that's right. But I don't know. It just depends on how they rule things. That's an NFLPA thing, I think. But again, to hear both sides, like right now, it's very amicable. There's definitely a strong mutual interest. It's just a matter of, I mean, he's got Drew Rosenhaus as an agent. So
it's not going to
come super cheap or anything. But I think there's definitely a desire on both sides to work something out. And, you know, you think about Shaq Barrett. I mean, I think he's made more money this year, you know, than in his first 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already made a huge increase and then, you know, can probably make threefold, if not fourfold, full more money on this new deal coming up in terms of what he's getting per year.
Greg, kind of the number we floated out there, it just sort of as a ballpark number, is about $1 million per sack. Does that sound about right to you, or does that seem a little high, a little low?
Yeah, it's like, it's funny. I was asking a bunch of people kind of that do this and are pretty good at valuing contracts, like who's the comp? Who's the guy you'd point to? And the first answer I got was that it's going to cost more than Trey Flowers did last year. And Trey Flowers got 5 years and $90 million. That's $18 million a year with about $50 million guaranteed. And I don't know that I would agree with that. I don't think it'll be that high. I tend to think of it somewhere around. I was wondering whether 3 years and $50 million would get it done. That's like 16.7 per year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you guarantee the first 2 years, so it's like $35 million guaranteed. And again, it's really hard to know. Like I said, he has 1 year as a bona fide elite level best sack guy in the NFL, and the other rest of his body of work is just a role player. He's a guy who's never had more than whatever six sacks in a season. So it's hard. If you look at recent years, and you're trying to find comps for who, I mean, like Olivier Vernon got paid like crazy with worse numbers for his pre-contract sack totals than what Shaq Barrett has now. So I think, you know, you can get to $15 million a year really easy. Mm-hmm. And then the question is whether it gets to Hardball and it gets $16 or $18 million, mm-hmm. and how many years they're willing to guarantee. It'll be tricky. And, you know, at some point it has to get too expensive for the Bucks. As much as they want to have him and he wants to stay here, mm-hmm. you can't just write a blank check.
Right. And you mentioned Drew Rosenhaus being his agent. That immediately, in my mind, calls Quan Alexander, who I believe also was one of his clients.
Yeah.
You know, and he wound up giving him, was it $56 million contract? I know that's not a full guarantee, but still, yeah.
Right. I was a big Quan Alex. I mean, I thought Quan would do well in free agency. I didn't think he would do that well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of those where you pat him on the back and say, that's great that you got paid what you did. Mm-hmm. You know, especially coming off, if he had gotten that completely healthy, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been surprised. But coming off an ACL, where you have a question mark, you know, a key injury, mm-hmm. I thought he did really well.
Right. Well, I mean, back to the Shaq Barrett one, Ren, I'm about to change the topic. Did you have anything else you wanted to do on that before I did that? Before
no,
we change
no,
the topic?
That was just sort of a, you know, like, hey, be ready. We're not really talking yet, but we're
now we are.
Now we are. So please, yeah. So go ahead. Let's just keep rolling.
Well, I mean, with Shaq Barrett, you know, as Drew Rosenhaus goes to the negotiating table for him, the other thing he can also bring to that is a Pro Bowl selection. As we're talking right now, Greg, the Pro Bowl rosters just came out about 2 hours ago. Shaq Barrett is on there. Chris Godwin's on there. Mike Evans is on there. They all make the Pro Bowl. Three players from the Buccaneers, which is quite the uptick from recent years, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think this was a really good showing, a fair showing for them. Three for them is the most they've had since 15, which is kind of a crazy year where they got five in. Mankins made it in, McCoy and Doug Martin and Winston was a replacement player. Levante David actually got in the Pro Bowl that year. Mm-hmm. Three for them is good. I went into the day thinking that Shaq Barrett was a lock. I thought Mike Evans would get in, and I really didn't know whether Chris Godwin would get in or not. I mean, he had gotten really low numbers on the fan voting, was seventh among NFC receivers in the fan voting. So I didn't know whether the kind of the reputation he's built with players and coaches would be enough to overtake that. So that put him in ahead of Amari Cooper, ahead of Stephon Diggs, ahead of a lot of other good receivers. His numbers should get him in. Absolutely. He earned it with his play on the field. Mm-hmm. You talk about being second in the NFL in touchdown catches, first in the NFL in yards after catch. I think he's second in yards. I feel bad for him that this hamstring is going to keep him, at least to some extent, from having the full, potentially team record-breaking season he was on pace to have.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about that, Greg, because I've seen you mention that a lot today of such and such player was in the top 10, in the top 5, whatever, and I think you just said Chris Godwin was in the top 7, but then you just mentioned, it sounded like is there another step once the votes have been calculated as far as who makes it and who doesn't?
Yeah, the way the Pro Bowl works, there's open online fan voting, and that counts for 1/3 of the process. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, all NFL players are given a ballot, mm-hmm. and they're allowed to vote just like fans do. And all NFL coaches get ballots as well, head coaches. So 1/3 is fans, 1/3 is players, 1/3 is head coaches. And those three come together to decide who makes the team.
Gotcha. And the numbers you were talking about earlier today was the
Balloting, which again, I mean, it's part of it, but it's kind of the most, if there's a part of this that's just a silly popularity contest, that's it. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I pointed out online that like the inside linebacker voting, Kiko Alonso made the top 10 for the Saints, and Alonso has like 31 tackles all season. He's not even a starter in New Orleans, mm-hmm. has like no sacks, no interceptions, and he's in there getting more votes than Levante David, just because there are more Saints fans that just get online and vote for every single Saint and kind of party line vote, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, it's what you're going to have with an online vote.
So, yeah, and you talked about how, you know, it's a popularity contest, and you talked about how, you know, Chris Godwin maybe hasn't built up enough, you know, camaraderie or people that know him as far as other players in the league or other coaches in the league that'll put him above someone like Amari Cooper, who's been in a league, you know, around about the same time, but he's played in bigger markets, obviously, you know, Dallas, the media machine that place is. Can you talk, like, are there other players? We got to talk about snubs. This is where I'm going. And, mm-hmm. you know, of course, Levante David's the obvious one. But Buck fans have been talking about Ali Marpet forever. You know, at guard, was he ever in the top 10? Or,
not from a voting standpoint. And again, it's tough because, you know, Marfette's never been to a Pro Bowl.
Right.
You know, I think he's somebody who's respected, but probably not that well known by fans. I mean, he hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since his rookie year. The Bucs are, you know, bottom five in terms of sacks allowed. So the two things you're going to hang your head on as an offensive lineman is can you block for an elite running back and can you protect your quarterback? So the line as a whole isn't going to make it easy for a guy like Ali Marpet to get in the Pro Bowl. I don't think that was a serious consideration. Yeah. Once they got to 2-6, once they were giving up the sacks they were giving up, I didn't think that was going to happen for them.
Yeah, and so, Greg, if I'm just understanding you right, what you're saying is regardless of kind of Ali's personal individual performance, the line play as a whole is really might be what holding him back on that from recognition over the last couple of years.
Right. I feel like guard is a position that a lot of times gets placed with an elite running back.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way to say you have a dominant guard is to show in your run game. And I mean, the Bucs, you know, don't even have a 400-yard, 500-yard rusher right now. So it's a hard sell. You know, I think you'll see people that have a reputation in the league that kind of, I think offensive line might even be easier than other positions to set yourself up as a Pro Bowler and then keep coming back in, even if you're not necessarily playing an elite level. Dallas kind of got loaded up that way where they were still getting to the Pro Bowl when their line wasn't as elite as it used to be.
Yeah, and that's fair. You know, I've talked about that on the pod before. You know, it's once Ali breaks through, you know, if he breaks through, I should say, it's right. A lot. The offensive line, especially the interior sports center and the guards, is once you get in there, it's sort of easier to hang on to that position, even if, you know, your play starts to tail off because it becomes like more name recognition. And you get that, like you said, by running back and playing on Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night football, and, you know, having Booger and Tony Romo and those guys talk about you on national TV.
Right. And they don't have a lot of that. I mean, the other thing that works against Ali, I think, is just it's a great thing that he's played at three different positions in his career, but it hurts him a little bit because it's like, here's a promising right guard. The next year, well, he could be a really good center, and then the next year, well, he's a left guard. So I think that versatility helps him. It doesn't necessarily help him in terms of solidifying himself as being really good at one position.
So is there anybody out there, and last snub question for me, Levante, Ali, is there anybody out there that maybe, you know, you guys in the media room or you heard around Advent Health Training Center that the Bucs were pushing for and hoping, you know, they had a real shot this year to make the Pro Bowl? Go ahead.
Yeah, they're only pushing four guys. So, I mean, it was the three that made it that were getting consistent weekly social media love, promotion. The Bucs put out a weekly, you know, these are storylines to watch. These are things to keep an eye on. And there's these three and Levante. And Levante's in a tough, I mean, I think this is a year where we thought Levante would finally get over that awkwardness of being a 4-3 outside linebacker where you're stuck going up against the 3-4 outside linebackers that are just sack crazy. So it's like Levante has a good year, but if there's somebody else who has 13 sacks and somebody else who has 15 sacks, him having 120 tackles and 3 sacks and 2 interceptions doesn't look as good. So that was kind of unfair for him in a lot of years where he deserved to go. Now he's inside. Now he's an inside linebacker to where it would make it fair, but, you know, it's just he didn't have any fan traction at all. You know, Levante's had years where he had like 5 interceptions and 6 sacks in a year, and he hasn't had those flash plays. He has 1 sack. He has 1 interception. The best stat he has is he has 10 tackles for loss, which is a great stat for a middle linebacker. But, you know, I mean, if you look at somebody like, the two that got in were the two legacies in the NFC. It's Bobby Wagner and Luke Kuechly. I think they've been 5 times and 7 times. So it's kind of, hey, that guy who was really good last year. I mean, Luke Kuechly, to me, hasn't had a great year. He had a pick against Winston in London. I think he has 1 other interception all year. He has 10 passes defensed, which is a really strong number for a linebacker, but I don't know that he has a sack, doesn't have as many tackles for loss. Panthers obviously are not nearly as good. So I feel like he's dropped off, but again, he's the future Hall of Famer. He's somebody who's going to be on the ballot unless he's just embarrassingly bad. So I'm not surprised he's there. There's younger guys in the NFC right now that were getting more votes than Levante. I mean, Blake Martinez in Green Bay leads the NFL in tackles. He was ahead. Jordan Hicks isn't really on a great defense in Arizona, but he was ahead. So there's just a lot of those types. Trying to think who else was ahead of him. Maybe Kendricks in Minnesota. You know, that's a pretty good defense there, so he's ahead. I don't even know Levante is an alternate right now. I saw 2 different sites that did, like, top 10 Pro Bowl snub. Neither had Levante among the picks there. So I think he's just been a little too quiet on a defense that probably gave up a little too much to really be taken seriously nationally.
Well, Greg, I got a question about one guy, and he's not one of the four that you named that the Bucs were pushing, but he is somebody that I've seen kind of percolate up there, but Vita Vea, I don't know that he's necessarily had the Pro Bowl year just yet, but I mean, he certainly has had a fun year to watch as a Bucs fan.
Yeah, I mean, I asked Bruce Arians yesterday in his presser who he thought were the most compelling Bucs for the Pro Bowl, and I think Vita Vea was the third name he brought up. I think he said maybe the fourth. He said Chris and Mike, and I was kind of intrigued to hear it in that order even. And then he mentioned Shaq, Vita Vea, and Levante. And Vita doesn't have, he's kind of the anti-Godwin, where Godwin has ridiculously compelling numbers and has over and over again made a good case for himself by production on the field. Vita doesn't have that. Vita has, whatever, a half sack, one sack. He literally does not have a tackle in the last three games. So there's not a lot. If you don't watch him, if you don't know the attention he's drawing and the pressure he's creating, there's not a whole lot in the box score that shows up for Vita Vea. So I would have been impressed if he was. I think Bill Barnwell, who I respect a lot, he would have liked to see Vita Vea on his Pro Bowl ballot. But I don't think there's many people yet to pick up on him. It's one of those where he's had 2 years in the league, has missed a couple games with injuries that have taken him back. But maybe a year from now, this is where we're talking about Vita Vea, you know, having a little bit more success getting to the quarterback. He seems to get so close and have a play or two each week where he blows right past the quarterback and is just not quite shifty enough to adjust a half step when the quarterback does the same. But I would not be surprised a year from now if he's in the Pro Bowl.
Greg, when Vita Vea picks up the center and sets him down in the lap of the quarterback, does that count as a sack?
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Vita Vea, probably more than anybody else, maybe Jensen will do this, where there's these two plays that you don't even necessarily notice during the game. And when people go back on the coach's film on the All-22, there's a ridiculously physically dominant play where he just, you know, destroys somebody. And he just needs more of those, or needs to have those where it turns into a fumble or it turns into a big splash play. Because just dominating your opponent on a play is something you maybe don't even notice on TV during a game.
Right. I get that.
All right, enough of the Pro Bowl. Let's get to the Bucs, their season, the game coming up. Now, I'm going to start with a question that I've been throwing out in social media, it feels like, for 3 weeks now. I haven't got an answer from anybody. I've tried your colleague Rick Stroud twice. We'll see if he answers. He didn't answer last mailbag. We'll see if he answers this mailbag. I don't know. Maybe I'm being blackballed. Don't care. What I'm seeing is the Bucs had the big lead against the Giants. Came back, you know, Giants obviously came back and won that game. They had the big lead against the Jaguars. The Jaguars at the 3-yard line going in to tie the score. Bucs had the big lead against, who did we just play? Sorry, not the Colts.
Lions, that's okay.
Lions, thank you. Yeah. Big lead against the Lions. They're up 21-3. You know, and then the Lions are on their half of the field, or, you know, our half of the field across the 50, about to go in to tie up the game. You know, the Jaguars and the Lions game, Sean Murphy Bunting made a pick, took one all the way back. But with these big leads and you watch other teams in the league, like, game's over, you know?
Right.
But there's this consistency of the teams coming back. Now, if you can only point one finger, because I understand it's probably a little bit of both, but you can only point one finger. Do you point the finger at the offense because the style of Bruce Arians' offense that, you know, depends on these chunk plays, personnel-wise, aren't set up to grind out the clock, shorten the game, give the other team fewer possessions? Or is it the defense who, you know, ultimately you're the one letting them score points and get back into the game? Like, is it the offensive philosophy, or is it just, hey, the defense needs to play a little better?
Yeah, I mean, it's both. That's a cop-out answer, but it's both. There's a couple things that work there. One, I felt like, I mean, the dominance early was ridiculous. It was 314-2 in yards, like five minutes in the second quarter. 314-2. Somebody pointed out Winston had more touchdown passes than David Blau had completions at one point. So again, it's the easy thing is when it's 21-0 to kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit, and you don't want them to do that, but you stop, you're less likely to make the throws that are risk throws, that are interception throws. And then the problem they had Sunday is that he just didn't run the ball at all. It had 27 carries for 47 yards, I think. It's like, I tweeted this out, but it's like in the history of the Buccaneers franchise, they've had like 423 games of 25 carries and more. This was the worst out of all 423 in terms of yards per carry. They've never gotten so little out of it so much. And I think that gave the Lions the ball back. It didn't chew up clock as much in the second half as you'd like to with a 20-point lead. And then there were kind of those two fluky pass plays where, you know, there's one where Vita Vea, again, didn't get a sack, and the quarterback kind of rolled out of it and hit Tracy. I forget who the receiver was. But it was like two two pass plays that wound up being like 95 yards that put them at the goal line. And that's how they got two touchdowns, the two West Hill touchdowns. And that took it really quickly from 24-3, you know, easy game, to 24-17. And like you said, they got to the 32-yard line. It was good intense there before the pick. So I would point to a natural taking the foot off the gas. They also did lose Godwin and Miller in that part too. So, I mean, some of what got them to 24-3 was having two of their best deep ball guys, pass guys available. So I think that's part of it. But as a whole, they really haven't played well with the lead. They just, like you said, Jaguars was a game they should have put away. I think they let Minshew kind of get the stadium excited and then make it closer to a game. I mean, it was still a two-score game. They were at the goal line trying to make it a one-score game. So it wasn't quite as tight as the Lions game ended up. But yeah, they just, I don't know they had that much experience in what they do up 20. Everybody talks about, you know, just put your foot on their throat, finish it off. And they need to learn to do that. It's nice that they've had four in a row. They've been in victory formation 4 weeks in a row. But yeah, they can make it more impressive if they're holding on to that big lead better than they did. I mean, they ended up winning by 21 Sunday, so they got it done, but it took that crazy pick six to do it.
Right. Well, Greg, let me ask you about that. You know, you're talking about they've just won four in a row. What do you guys make of that there in the media room? And then also, you know, you guys are there in the locker room, you're around the building. You know, I don't know that we've actually talked to somebody who's been there in the building here in the last couple of weeks. So well, you know, what's it like there now, four in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it's much different. I mean, again, it's weird to have a team that has a four-game losing streak and a four-game win streak in the same year, but they've done that. It's much lighter.
Uh-huh.
Guys are easier to be around. I mean, it's easier for our job. It's just because when they've lost four in a row and they're 2-6, mm-hmm. you know, all you're really writing is kind of what's wrong with this? Why isn't this working? All those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to write the fun stuff, the silly stuff, the sidebarish stuff. So, no, I think they're enjoying it. I mean, there are guys in this locker room. I mean, 16, they had a five-game win streak to go from whatever it was, 3-5 to 8-5,
mm-hmm.
and really put themselves in position for a playoff birth. And that was what's different about this streak. But here, I just think it's them. You don't really want to say changing the culture. Like, Bruce doesn't really like the word culture very much. But mm-hmm. I just think one thing that Bruce said is that they expect to win when they go into a stadium now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that changes things. I mean, I think you can definitely diminish what they've done just by pointing out that the Jags aren't a good team and the Falcons haven't been a good team and the Lions and the Colts. I mean, the Colts, you know, were in playoff contention, had everything to play for still when the Bucs got them. And they pulled it out. I mean, you see what the Colts did last night, and it's like they're not a very good team. They're struggling right now with who they are. So it diminishes what they did there. But the Bucs aren't a team that has beaten bad teams. So to me, it's a good progress for them to take care of the wins they're supposed to take care of. You know, I think when they were, you know, when you're sitting there, I guess 3-6 is where they were.
Mm-hmm.
This is an impressive run. This is, I mean, I think we thought this would be an easier half of the season just because the teams they were playing were weaker.
Mm-hmm.
But still, to see maybe the way they've won has probably been more impressive than that they've won. I mean, I think the Colts game was tight, but the other games they've had pretty good control of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something they've done very much. It's like they won by 21 on Sunday, and I think the last time they won by that many points was the Bears game, which was the opener, whatever the hurricane year was. Is that 16 mm-hmm. or 17? Maybe 17. Yeah, 17, week mm-hmm. two. That's like basically almost 3 years since you won as dominantly as you did there. So just to have those kind of games where guys can just have fun on the field and be laughing with each other, they kind of need that. There's been an absence of that for a long time.
Yeah, it's one of those, whenever I think about, you know, people talking about, well, they, you know, they haven't beaten good teams. They haven't beaten good teams and things like that. And I go, yeah, but regardless of what team the Bucs have played, every single person on the other side of the ball circled this as an easy win for their team.
Right.
You
yeah,
know,
going
so,
in here, at least.
Yeah, yeah, for
right.
sure. So, you know, hey, we got one out. So Bucs have two games left, Greg. I ostensibly, the Texans are probably going to be the harder test than the Falcons,
yeah.
if you had to guess. But we've got Vernon Hargraves coming back into the building. I don't know that that's as much as the storyline is just, you know, the Texans are I believe this they're looking to cinch their playoff berth this week.
They can clinch a division title with a win. Yeah,
yeah, if they win. So hopefully we will spoil that. But as you're looking here at the last part of the season, you know, the Bucs finishing out, what are you looking for? What are you anticipating coming out of the Bucs, or even what are they anticipating? anticipating and looking for there in the building.
Yeah, I mean, they want to win out. Trust me, there's nothing they want more than, I mean, if they win out, that'll match the longest winning streak in the franchise's history. Bruce said today he'll be pissed that the season is over because, mm-hmm. I mean, you get that kind of momentum, you just want to keep going, and they have to wait 8 months. But yeah, for them, if they can win out and go 9-7, that I think that, you know, exceeds most anybody's expectations before the year, and it certainly exceeds anybody's expectations when they're sitting there 2-6, struggling defensively as badly as they were. There's a lot to be excited about if they're 9-7. I mean, I think they've taken such a big step forward that I think it'll be easier for them in free agency. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a 5-11 team, it's a hard sell to get a coveted free agent to come to you without having to overpay. Or maybe you need some kind of connection where there's a guy he knows on the team that he's played with or played for. If you're 9-7, I mean, this division, you know, Carolina's in a bit of disarray right now. Atlanta might have a coaching change. They've been so up and down. They can make a pretty good case for being the second best team in this division if they just win maybe one of their next two. I mean, it's like for them not to be second in the division, they'd have to lose out, and either Carolina or Atlanta would have to win out. So they haven't been in that spot in a long time. I mean, I think it's seven of the last 8 years they've finished fourth. They've been last. So anything that's not last is a big step forward. I think I get where, you know, you have people that want them tanking for draft picks because they were picking, you know, when this win streak started, they were picking sixth. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're picking sixth, you might be able to get a top three quarterback. You might be able to have somebody slide to you that's ridiculously talented and falls to you because the quarterbacks are going high. Mm-hmm. Now they're picking like 16th or 17th. It's a whole different deal. I mean, that's O.J. Howard territory where, you know, you're going to get a good player, but it's not going to be a Devin White game-changing player at 17 most likely. So it's nice that way because they don't want to be picking in the top five. Nobody wants to consistently be picking that high. It's great to get the talent, mm-hmm. but this is where they want to be. This is a big step in getting back to where they want to be, even if it's not in the playoffs this year.
All right, before we let you go, we got to talk about the guy. We got to talk about Jameis Winston. I am not going to ask you if he's coming back or not. Quite frankly, we do not talk about that on this podcast anymore.
You put a moratorium on it, Greg.
Yeah, we're like, forget it. Like, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, all of January and February to talk about that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there is something different about Jameis, you know, during this win streak, you know, resilience maybe, you know, people are trying to say like, oh, he's a snap and clear guy, but that hasn't always necessarily been the case with the most recent, you know, I guess, example being the Carolina London game. You know, you can say snap and clear, but it obviously bothered him, you know, and then you can go back to the Bengals game last year where he had a complete meltdown in Cincinnati. I mean, complete and utter meltdown. Like it looked like on his face, like he didn't think he was ever going to play quarterback in the NFL again. Now you bring in Bruce Arians, there's sort of this attitude change, you know, towards Jameis Winston. You can believe that or not, but he's a different guy. Like, when he makes mistakes, it affects him differently, and it's affecting the team differently. Like, talk about that and sort of what's the difference between Jameis the first 4 years and Jameis now, because there's a marked difference. And I've heard a little talk. I know I kind of – well, I don't say I started it, but I did mention that, hey, if Jameis didn't have these interceptions, he's an MVP candidate. And then I heard someone, Rich Eisen, talk about the same thing today. It's a clip going around on Twitter. So it's almost baffling to me that people are still sort of on the fence what to do with this guy. But talk about, since he's – Brent's giving me the wrap it up question signal. Yes, I'm going for it. I'm trying. But there's a difference between Jameis, what we had before BA, and now BA. And what – just sort of talk about what you think that change has been and what you've seen being there like all the time around the team.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, and this is simplifying things a little bit, and you don't want to make quarterbacks about wins, but I think the biggest thing is that they've won with him, and they've won, for the most part, not despite him. They've kind of won because of him, and that's different. That's something we haven't seen. I mean, they, especially late in the year, like, I mean, his last two Decembers, they've been 1-4 in December, and they're 3-0 in December now. That's not what the Bucs are like at the end of the year. So for them to be finishing strong and finishing on an uptick, especially with him playing as well as he has, is different than what we're used to. I mean, he played well in this last six games when he came back last year, but he kept doing it in losses. Like it wasn't enough to get them wins. So for them to win, and you talked a little bit about resiliency. I mean, that bouncing back from early turnovers isn't easy, and it seems to almost be his formula right now, which is weird. Mm-hmm. You know, So you had, you know, very first pass three times this season, and he's bounced back from it four times, I guess it is. And then first possession. I mean, just to do that again, I mean, that pick in the first possession there against Detroit, I mean, it was another middle of the field linebacker makes an athletic play, but it's a bad pick. And it set them up in Detroit territory. And I think, you know, as Bruce said, what really helped is that the defense just boom, three and out. I mean, Will Golston dropped somebody on the first play for a loss, and then he got incompletes, and then you get the ball back. And it's like that mistake almost vanished. So the biggest thing I see with Jameis is how comfortable he is throwing to everybody on the field. You know, to throw for 458 and 456, as we've mentioned, that's the first time that's happened in NFL history, back-to-back games. But more than that is, like, you know, he's averaging 10 yards an attempt. And it's not just, I mean, the first eight games of the season, maybe, it was really just Chris and Mike. It was just Evans and Godwin that were getting all the plays. I think in the first nine games, it had one total game where anybody else besides those two had 50 yards receiving in a game, like Howard did it in one game. And then I think they've had eight since then, and like three in one game, to where just lots of different people have stepped up. I mean, Brashad Perriman has been huge out of nowhere.
Right.
I mean, almost 300 yards in the last four games after being a complete non-factor for the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's almost like the targets around him haven't really mattered that much. He's made plays to Justin Watson and Scotty Miller. He started hitting the tight ends in stride again. So it's just, I think he's, I don't know if it's him settling into this offense or Leftwich getting a better feel for his strengths as a passer and calling plays that fit into that. But I mean, this is, you know, as good a two games as you can really ask for, to have two 450 yard games with four touchdowns and one turnover. That'll win most weeks. And he's not going to be that good, obviously, on most days. But I think that's probably what's turned people around. It's just they've won four in a row. He's been a big part of these wins. Mm-hmm. And you see the team kind of rally around him a little bit. We do I've done a poll like every 2 weeks for the last 6 weeks. And it was like, you try and do the same poll. You try and make it as close to, you know, scientific as you can with the Twitter poll. But it was like, you know, here are the four options. And it's, you know, give him a long-term extension, give him a franchise tag, move on with another quarterback, or you know, you're still not sure. And I think the first week we did it was coming off maybe the Arizona win or something. And it was like 58% that either wanted to give him the long-term deal or give him the franchise. So it's like, oh, more than half. That's impressive. But it still kind of pointed to how divided the fan base was. And then the next two, I think the next poll 2 weeks later was like after a loss and maybe even a bad loss. I forget which one it was. Maybe the Saints, one of the lopsided losses. And he was at 41%. So like only 41% of 2,000 plus votes wanted him back, period. You know, and it kind of has that like approval rating feel, if you will, with a poll. But then, you know, they won two more and he hadn't even really played that well. But I mean, it was exciting the way they beat, I guess it was the Colts was the second one there. And all of a sudden he's at 67%. You're like, wow, that's much better than it was. He's at 67% now. You know, fans are, you know, 2/3 of your fan base wants you back. That's a pretty compelling message. And this is just a Twitter poll. It's not like I'm going door to door or something, but that was 67%. And now you add two 450 yard games and he was at 88% yesterday. And like, I mean, that's crazy. So now it's like literally 10 people want him back for every one that says they want to move on in that poll. And again, that also points to how easily swayed people can be, because this is a 5-year sample that's changed and flipped on itself in less than a month. But it's recency. It's what have you done for me lately? And they've won four in a row, and he's leading the NFL in passing yards, on pace for 5,000 yards, challenging the MVP of the league and Lamar Jackson for the touchdown title. And you do that, and it's easier to say, well, you just have the 24 interceptions too. But again, that's kind of the season he's been. I mean, somebody had a really good point in that besides Lamar Jackson, he's probably one of the most exciting players in the league because there is such a high probability that someone's going to score when he throws a pass.
Right.
It might be the defense every other game, but there's a good chance it's going to be the offense pretty often too.
Yeah, well, regarding, just so you know, Ren has actually been touting that exact same thing the last couple of weeks. Even with me kind of laughing at him sometimes, saying Jameis Winston's the most exciting player in the NFL. I don't know that go that far, but that's what he says.
I don't really know who.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely other people that have much better reputation. You give Aaron Rodgers the ball in the fourth quarter, it's fun to watch. And, you know, Brady's Brady, and there's lots of guys that fit into that mold. But in terms of just take away their reputations and just see what they're doing each week, he's making a lot of exciting play. And you have to deal with the turnovers too right now. But I can see why people are more forgiving when he makes the big plays as often as he has in the last month.
Well, winning cures all. Winning cures all. All right, Greg, I have one short question for you, and then I'm going to get you out of here. You were talking just a few minutes ago about those interceptions that Jameis has been throwing in the last couple of games, but he's been doing them real early. And I've kind of been spinning this idea around. In Bruce Arians' book, The Quarterback Whisperer, he talks about how he lets his quarterback pick like the first 10, 15 plays, like their favorite plays from practice that week or something of that nature. And, you know, presumably those tend to be some of the same plays. Are maybe some of these picks really just coming because whatever Jameis is picking in those first 10 to 15 plays, like other defenses are just knowing and reading and they're seeing those plays. And once we get past those to where the rest of the playbook opens up, you know, things settle in, you know, is there anything to maybe BA scaling that back a little bit or, you know, coaching Jameis a little bit more on what plays to pick and which ones not? Have you had any conversations about that or any thoughts towards that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of a kind of a consulting type thing in terms of picking the first 15 plays. I think it's not scripting plays 1 through 15 so much as it is, you know, here are 15 plays we want to get to early. And if it's, you know, I think most NFL call sheets have, you know, a short yardage, a mid-range, and a long range. So, you know, they're not saying the third play is going to be for third and one, but if the third play is for third and one, it's a different play call. But they're supposed to be the throws that the quarterback is most comfortable making, just to help him be in the best position to get comfortable. And obviously Jameis has done the exact opposite with that set of circumstances. What you want to do to start things off well, he's two of the last three, you know, first pass and it's an interception. We were joking in the press box Sunday that like you should just drop back and dirt it, just like spike it on first down, just to get that first pass attempt out of the way without an interception, and then do what you have to on second and 10. But yeah, they're similar throws. The last three early interceptions, they're all linebacker picks where somebody kind of makes it look like they're rushing and ducks back in coverage. You know, the two picks that Darius Leonard had, he's just a great athlete, bigger size than most linebackers, and made two really good catches over his head. I don't know that Winston knew where he was on the one. The other, I think he just probably made a bad throw. And then the pick that Tavai or whatever his name is, the Lions second round pick, you know, I think he just made a bad pass early on. And it's unfortunate because you just want to get that out of the way. But the middle of the field has probably been a problem spot for him with Vic. So, you know, the idea of them throwing more to the tight ends this week brings up a vulnerability for him with interceptions. He's got to be careful about that. But yeah, I think it's probably a weird coincidence more than it is anything else. But he's struggled early and has been able, like you said, to kind of forget it happened and moved on with amazing success. I think they're 4-4-1 when he throws an interception on the first drive this season. And there's not many things that the Bucs win on an 80% clip at. So it's crazy.
You know what? If that stays 4-1 when he throws an interception, then I'm okay with him throwing an interception.
Right. Do it every week.
That was Greg Allman of The Athletic. Ren, always fun to get Greg back on the show, but man, he had some stuff to tell us there that I thought was rather interesting coming out here about the Pro Bowl.
Yes, snubs or not snubs?
Yeah.
That is the question.
Well, you know,
I thought he made some great points.
I did too. I really did, because I like a lot of people was going in going, okay, actually top of my list was obviously Levante. Ali Marpet was there, but I understand why he wouldn't have necessarily been there. Although it was a different reason than what Greg gave, but like Vita Vea, I thought might have possibly had a shot. That might have been.
That is about it.
Yeah, that's because I mean, Jameis Winston, for as good as he's had here over the last couple of weeks, if you look at the body of his work over the course of the season, not a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, really not even as an alternate.
Who?
Jameis.
Over you say last couple? You say last couple of seasons or
no? When you look at the body of his work over this season, not just the last couple of games.
Yeah,
he has not had a Pro Bowl season.
You're out of your mind.
You don't think so?
He's number one in passing yards. He's like number two in completions. He's number two in touchdowns. I mean, what do you want?
Yeah,
I mean, the huge negative is obviously, yes, he throws a lot of interceptions. Yeah.
But if you're going to throw for 5,000 yards, you're going to throw some damn interceptions, right?
Well, not necessarily, because, you know, like there's quarterbacks out there that got, you know, like Mahomes got like three interceptions.
That's crazy.
Jameis has like 24. Mm-hmm. So I get that. But, I mean, to sit there and say that he doesn't have the numbers to be a Pro Bowler, like, that's crazy. He's got MVP type numbers. The only thing that's holding him back is, you know, his previous reputation and his interception.
But flip the script, okay? Keep the interceptions where they are, because I know the premise of your argument has been if he didn't have as many interceptions, right?
Yeah.
Let's flip the script and say this defense was actually as good as it's been the entire season long, and we didn't have a kicker who missed a couple kicks in a clutch time, and all of a sudden we go from a 7-7 team to maybe we're sitting here at, I don't know, 10-4.
10-5.
10-5. Yeah, wherever we are at this particular point. Like let's just say we won, even though we still had those interceptions. Do you think that would have mitigated all of those things, and we would actually be talking about him possibly in the Pro Bowl?
That's a tough one. Like I feel like he's the next one in, because if you saw the quarterbacks that made it, mm-hmm. they're all the quarterbacks I picked that I would take instead of Winston and Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, for the NFC, it was Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and
Russell Wilson.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the quarterbacks were Mahomes, Watson, and Jackson.
Right, but those were AFC.
Yeah, but right. Remember, sort of this. I don't want to call it a firestorm, but you know, this whole debate that I started with Evan and some other people have jumped in. Javier, hello, thank you for chiming in. Was that
Ren, it is hola for Javier.
Hola, Javier. These are the guys I would, that going forward as a Buccaneer fan, mm-hmm. these are the only quarterbacks that I would take above Jameis Winston. And mm-hmm. five of those five all made the Pro Bowl.
Right.
So so you got Breeze making the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers is making the playoffs, and Russell Wilson's making the playoffs. So,
and all of those guys are perennial Pro Bowl as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, one of those guys probably is going to be the NFC representative. Mm-hmm. So there drops out. And I think Jameis is the next one that goes in.
Like, you mean you think he should be, or like you think in the voting totals and stuff he will be?
Oh, well, I don't know. It's voting. No, I think Dak will get in probably.
Right.
But yeah, I think, you know, Jameis has put up the numbers to be there. And, you know, so
right. But that's sitting at a 7-7 season.
Yeah, it's sitting at a 7-7 season. Mm-hmm. If, you know, keep the interceptions, and of course, you know, we've talked about nauseam on Twitter. Gay makes the kick. The refs don't mm-hmm. call that play dead in Tennessee, and we end up winning that game. And we are sitting at 10-5 with mm-hmm. with two to play. I think Jameis Winston, with the numbers that we have, would be in the conversation, but it would still go to Jackson. You know, it'd be like, who's the MVP? Well, it's Lamar Jackson. Okay, who else should get consideration? I think Jameis would be like the next guy out there because he's first or second in all the other categories that matter.
Man, it's one of those things where you just sit back, and I wanted to say this so many times during Greg's conversation, but I didn't want to interrupt him. Winning cures all. Winning covers a multitude of sins. And you know, I have said often this year, but more so in the past few years or the past few games, I can live with the interception as long as we win the game.
Because
The team can overcome. I mean, and I know everybody would say that, right? Yeah, do whatever the hell you want as long as we win. I don't care. But like for real though, if and I'm not asking Jameis to play any different. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not asking Jameis to play any differently. Just have the defense do what it's been doing the last couple of games, right? Mm-hmm. Bring that piece up. I'm good with Jameis. For the most part, I'm good with Jameis. God, I sound like I'm on that train now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And
I'm
it's
so committed to not being.
Yeah, you are. I mean, but it's something that, you know, the heavy pro Jameis people have been talking about forever. It's like, uh-huh. give him just like an average run game.
Yeah.
Somewhere between 20 and 12. And just give him an average defense somewhere between 20 and 12, mm-hmm. and then see what he does.
Right.
Well, he's just getting an average defense now. That's probably a lot. It's way closer to 20 than it is 12. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're blowing people out. The people they should blow out, they're blowing them out. Yeah, well, they're crappy teams. Well, you know, what happens when Seattle plays these crappy teams? They blow them out.
Right.
So do we, you know? Well, you know, the Colts game, they were down, you know, double digits three times. Yeah, mm-hmm. but they won. You know why? Because that's what good teams do. They beat teams they're better than. Like, that was the closest measure. That's why it's going to be so fun to see this Houston Texas game, the Texans game. And I really think for the fans that do show up and go to Ray J, I hope it's a big crowd. I'm not sure it will be. But I think it's going to be a totally different crowd than like when you and I went to Arizona.
Sure.
Where it was kind of like, okay, like they're winning, but the shoe's going to drop. Okay. Yeah. Like, I really think that now the fan base knows that they really believe it now. We're never out of it.
Yeah.
We're never out of it. Mm-hmm. So even if they are down 10, I think the fans are, instead of just sort of sitting there and just, you know, waiting to see what, I think they're going to be loud, mm-hmm. you know, like every third down that the Texans have, they're going to be loud. Like, they're going to be in it from the beginning to the end, no matter what happens on the field at all, because somewhere in the fourth quarter, we're going to have the ball, you know, and we're going to have a chance to extend the lead or take the lead. Like, we're going to be in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see what happens, you know, in this Texans game. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's it. You know, have a decent, and he's doing it without a decent running game. Like the running back is awful. It's awful.
Let me ask you this, because I saw, was it James Money Hill? Mr. Bucks Nation put this out on Twitter. I think it was him. Maybe it was Corey over at Play Reaction. One of those two guys talking about David Johnson, $10 million for a running back and all this stuff. On the list of things that we need to do is, now I'm not saying that we have a good running game. All right. I'm not saying that at all. I find the need to fix the running game right now so low on the priority list of what the Buccaneers have to do this offseason. How do you value fixing the running game on list of priorities heading into this offseason?
Every week it gets higher on my list.
Yeah.
Like there's still the need, and it's so hard to sort of rank them right now because we don't know what's going to happen along the defensive line. You know, if there was just one guy or just two guys, you know, at a JPP, Nassib, Sue, Shaq, you know, of course, Vita will be back. Golson will be back because it'll be cheap. But if it's out of those four guys, if there was just two of them and, you know, we had a strong feeling they were going to get one, then you could kind of prioritize. But we could show up where, you know, that all those guys are gone. It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Is it going to happen? Probably not. I would almost bet my life that all those, at least one of those guys are going to return. But as no, it's a possibility. So I really can't rank it. But every week that these running backs, you know, are just a complete non-factor besides just running the ball because you don't want to throw it 70 times, then yeah, it climbs higher and higher on the list. And when the Bucks keep winning, their first round draft pick keeps dropping and everyone's talking about getting a tackle or an edge rusher or an interior defensive lineman. But that all depends, again, what they do with these guys that are open. And, you know, it looks like the top three tackles in the draft, at least right now, are going in the top 10.
Are they?
And there's really not another tackle where we are. And there's really not an interior offensive lineman. Not that we really need it, but people are saying, well, you get a draft interior offensive lineman, kick Kappa outside and see what happens. That's the way to go. But there's really not one there, you know, where we're at like 15, 16. Like, that's a reach.
Do we really think Kappa could be an NFL?
It was just thrown out there.
Look, no, but let's have that conversation, though, because I don't think he could be. I know he was a tackle in college. I don't know that that would translate to him for the NFL. I think he's fine as a guard. I don't know that he'd go out and be a tackle.
I don't want to have this conversation because I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
Like I don't know. Like I'm not gonna say yes or no. I have no idea. So you know, well,
allow me to pontificate. He is not.
Okay. Yeah. But you know, it's a low probability that's even going to happen.
Right.
So now you start looking at interior defensive linemen. Well, like the top two guys, the guy at Auburn is going to be a top 10 pick. And then there's this other kid, Kilbrew or something. He's out of South Carolina. He's starting to go before us now. So now you're in this spot where I'm going, huh, like the best running back in college football might be available there for the Bucks in their first round pick. And you get to pick the cream of the crop. So you get, you know, your choice of sort of like, is there an Ezekiel Elliott in this draft? Is there a Le'Veon Bell in this draft?
So I'm sorry. I want to go back and repeat what I think I just heard you say just to make sure I got it right.
Sure.
What you're saying is because of the way other things are falling in the draft, where we are in the draft, wherever we wind up, because we're going to be in that mid to late 15 to 19 spot, right? Like that's just right out of the playoffs. So what you're saying is being there, what's going to fall to us as cream of the crop is going to be the running back class of this draft.
Yes.
Huh. So
like three wide receivers will be taken. A couple of DTs will be taken. I haven't really looked too deeply into the edge, you know, because that could be a place that we go depending again on what we do in free agency and who we can sign.
Right.
And or keep, but you know, but there's going to be a couple of edges gone, you know. So and then, like I said, where we are, there's really not an interior guy that's worth that pick. There's not a tackle that's worth that pick. So you start thinking, okay, well, and Jason Light does this. He has taken the best player available, not necessarily that it meets biggest need, such as OJ Howard. Like that was not a biggest need. He was definitely a great pick at where we got him. He fell to us. Everyone was happy with it.
Sure.
Okay.
So even if he's not had the most stellar of season this year,
right?
Still a good pick. Still doesn't mean it was a bad pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, the draft dudes say, which is Kyle and Joe, don't let having good players keep you from drafting great players.
That's a good word. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll preach.
And, yeah. And you've got the all-time leading rusher, I think, in college, the kid out of Wisconsin. His name's eluding me right now. Mm-hmm. He's coming out. You got ATN at Clemson coming out. And I'm sure there's other guys that are just slipping my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I think the all-time rushing leader at Ohio State, Dobbins, I believe it is. I think he's coming out. I mean, you know, there's Ohio State have running backs galore, like mm-hmm. going back to Minnesota with Rob Smith, Eddie George. Of course, you got Ezekiel Elliott. I know I'm missing some in between sort of the Eddie George, Ezekiel Elliott phase that have come out and played well. Robert Smith, I guess I should say to clarify. But, you know, this guy coming out has more rushing yards than all of them. So taking your running back in the first round is something I'm sort of playing around with.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Because it needs an upgrade. It just does.
I don't disagree with you there. But, you know, to be fair, though, by the time we get to the draft, in order of priority of stuff that needs to happen on this team, we will have re-signed our impending free agents. We will have signed new free agents.
Right.
So, you know, all of that stuff will have been decided. So once we get to that spot, and by the way, I'd much rather draft a guy and pay the rookie draft cost as opposed to bringing in an aging veteran who's going to cost a crap ton of money.
Yeah, I guess I never really addressed that. Here's the thing that with David Johnson, he's supposed to make like $10 million next year. He's not going to make it. And people sort of on Twitter are like, oh, we should I don't know if we should trade for – that's not going to happen. It's what's going to happen is he's benched right now. The Cardinals are going to cut him because they don't want to pay him $10 million.
Right.
So that makes his contract null and void. Mm-hmm. You know, so it makes sense for a guy that was, you know, the first overall draft pick for like 3 years in a row in fantasy football a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. you know, to come to his old coach where, oh, by the way, that was the guy he was, you know, when he had his best years, extraordinary years at running back, mm-hmm. is now our head coach. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but is he an upgrade from Peyton Barber? Probably. I don't watch a lot of, you know, Cardinals games, obviously, mm-hmm. but Peyton Barber is extraordinarily average.
Yes.
You know, he has regressed this year. It's time to move on from Peyton. I like him. I like what he brings, but he's just a guy, and he's proven it. You know, he's proven it for the past couple years. He's just a guy. Doesn't have the speed, doesn't have the power. Yeah, he's not going to get a 2 yard loss, but he's also not going to get a 7 yard gain either, you know, and he sure as hell is not taken to the house. Rojo was so terrible last year and then got off to an okay start. We're like, oh yeah, great. Like, hey, let's start him, get him the ball. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's still a part of me that feels like just quit giving the ball to Peyton
and just let Rojo take it
and just let Rojo 20 touches.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Right. Cause we ran it. What was it? 25 times this last game or something like that. You split that between the guys, give all those 25 to Peyton.
And they were split. It was like 13 to 12.
Right.
Like it was perfectly split, you know? And so there's a
and part. The other one was like Jameis.
Jameis didn't run.
Quarterback sneak, right?
Yeah, but, you know, he didn't run because of his – my thing is because of his hand, and that's why, you know, sort of our yards per average were so bad. Like, Jameis has been bailing out the yards per average running or even total yards per game every week. Like, you know, he's getting somewhere between 30 and 50 yards a week, and that just sort of boosts the average. And we're still not breaking 100, by the way. So Peyton's extraordinary average. You know, either we got to – I want to find out what we have in Ronald Jones. Just give him the ball. And I'm sure they have a plan for him. Like, they know this. They see it. They have a plan for him. But you know, bring in a David Johnson, sure. But I'm also not against going and getting the number one uno. If he's the best player on your board, you need a running back. You do. Is it the big need at the time? Probably not. Tackle will be.
Right.
But, you know, you want the fourth best tackle at 19?
How they evaluate the guy, right?
Like, it all is going to change. And when, you know, the draft season starts, there's going to be guys that I've never heard of that people, you know, they're going to come out of nowhere with combines and pro days and all this stuff. And when, you know, the serious grinding of watching these guys, you know, comes out, and the people that do this for a living and watch like 400, 500 prospects. And, you know, these names, like, I had no idea who Dalton Risner was this time last year, you know, but I wanted him real bad by draft time. So there's going to be guys like that too. But what helps the Buccaneers, at least in the draft, and I know I'm sort of going on a tangent.
A lot of draft talk here.
Yeah, I know, your favorite. But what helps the Buccaneers is that there's going to be – this is a great wide receiver class, and we don't need one. So there's probably going to be, I'm going to say three for sure, maybe four, depending where the Bucs land, that go before their pick. So wherever you see the Bucs pick, just lop off four, and that's where they're really picking, and then maybe lop off three more because of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like lop off Tua and Burrow, and then probably Herbert, and then take like three or four wide receivers. So say six, just to be safe. Mm-hmm. So if we're you know, drafting 17 for us, for what we need, we're really drafting 11 because every wide receiver and quarterback that is taken helps us.
Right. Pushes them down. Yeah. All right. I do want to go ahead and switch topics on this as we round out the show and close this one out. And this has been a thought that's been on my mind a lot, especially as we win more and more games, right? Mm-hmm. If you remember a couple years ago, we went on a nice little 5-game win streak, finished up 7-9. Everybody, you know, lost their mind, thought the next year we're going to the Super Bowl, got on Hard Knocks, you know.
Mike Smith's the best free agent we signed.
Oh my God. Yeah. We signed him to this, you know, nobody ever really told us what the numbers were, but the word was, it is a head coaching level type contract. Uh-huh. The Buccaneers have gone on this 4-game win streak, uh-huh, not because much has changed on offense, but because uh-huh the defense has stepped up. So you could say that this win streak has been on the back of the defense, much like it was back in 2016. You know, we got this Texans game coming in. We could go on a 5-game, could go on a 6-game win streak, could drop this one and pick up the next one. It's a lot of different combinations, but still, I am concerned going into next year because I think I'm just still burnt by what happened with Mike Smith. Because my God, did Mike Smith and that whole thing turn into a train wreck?
Right.
And I don't know that it necessarily set this franchise back a bunch of years as much as it just kept us frozen in time for a bunch of years. And now it feels like we're making progress forward, but I just, you know, this to me is a little bit like with Jameis, like what I say about Jameis, like, yeah, we're going to have good Jameis for this year. I have no doubt about it. I just need more time to know if this is going to flip back and forth or if this is what it is going.
Yeah. We need Jameis. We need good Jameis to show up week one next year.
And you week know, two. And
I can't have these growing pains again.
Exactly.
And then like, oh, look, mm-hmm, week seven, here's good Jameis. And hopefully we haven't buried ourselves enough to, you know, not make the playoffs.
Right. Flip side, not just Jameis, but also we need good defense to show up as well.
And this is just where I was going. And I've thought about this too. And this is the way I will ease your mind. That 5-game win streak, who was the single player on defense that was responsible for that? Completely unfair question, but true.
Not Gerald.
No, it's correct. Who had all the interceptions?
Was it LaVonta?
Who brings the sunshine?
Riley Bullitt. I don't know. Who
sprinkles it with glee?
Willy Wonka.
Close. What's the name of that song?
I don't know.
The Candy Man can.
Oh, Tandy. Keith Tandy. Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
We got there.
All right. We got there. Took a little longer than it needed to, but all right.
It did.
It's getting late, and that's my brain.
So, but next year when we came back with this defense, well, Keith Tandy wasn't playing.
Right, because we got rid of him, right? Didn't he go to Atlanta that year or something? Or did we keep him for another year and then they let him go? I don't remember, but still.
Yeah, they decided not to play him. So the guy that, you know,
made Jamel Dean'd him.
All right, sorry. Let me finish here. So they sat him and they didn't play him, and we got guys in front of him and they just got smoked. And Candy still didn't make the field. And then we got smoked all year, and then he's gone. But the guys that are making the plays now on the defense are going to be here because it's Carlton Davis. It's Jamel Dean. It's obviously SMB. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Whitehead. It's not quite Edwards yet, but, mm-hmm, you know, but it's Levante. It's Devin. It's Vita Vea. Like, those are the guys that are making the plays. And instead of just one guy who inexplicably didn't play well enough to get a shot to start next year. I don't know.
They told us. I mean, that was the question we had on this podcast. Like, if you go back, it's still on the feed. If y'all want to go back and listen to it, I don't know why you would at this point, but that was the question was, listen, how bad is Keith Tandy performing in practice that he can't get on the field?
Yeah.
After that performance in games, like from a couple years ago. So
yeah. So that's why you should feel better or not as or don't feel as cautious or you know, leery of what's going to happen next year. I'm way more leery of sort of regressing. Jameis has to relearn the, you know, because it feels like, you know, there's a lot of things that have gone away that no one talks about. Jameis getting hyped early in games and sailing the ball over his wide receiver. Remember that?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Right. Well, if anything, he's getting it like a little bit lower because he's right in interception range now at the beginning of games.
Throwing chest high to linebackers.
Right.
Problem solved, Brent.
We're not sailing it anymore, guys. We're not sailing it anymore.
But, you know, and then there was this, you know, these things about when it was a big game, Jameis would think he, you know, it's a big stage. He has to, you know, I got to show everybody, you know, what I am as a quarterback. And he'd overextend himself and play outside of himself. And then he'd have like one of these, you know, Carolina games.
It was a great question you asked Greg, though, about the Jameis playing the hero. Is he going to fall back in?
Thanks.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
It's all right.
It's good. Because you're right. I mean, that's what you're talking about right now is he gets into that mode. Yeah.
Yeah, but we're seeing it not happen now. Mm-hmm. You know, when, you know, you might not say it out loud, you might say it on Twitter, might not even say it, you know, to your buddy you're watching the game with, but you're thinking in your head, you know, is this going to be the game where, you know, Jameis just, you know, thinks he has to make every play, try to make every play. He's playing smarter football. He's throwing the ball better than he's ever thrown it. Maybe better than anybody in the NFL right now. So I like all those things, but I've also seen for the past 5 years, Jameis that ended the season comes back and starts the season below what he did. It's like he has to relearn some things. So that's what I'm more leery of than sort of the defense taking a step back. Because again, like I said, the guys that are making the plays now that's turning the defense around the corner are going to be on the field next year.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. And the only thing that we're going to know about that is going to be more games, more time, and we don't have enough of it left in this season, which just means we got to wait, you know, and see what happens next year, which I don't know if you saw, Red. I made my own little proposal for an extended season.
It
leads into the spring.
Did you just like fire that off and then forget about all the other stuff?
No, listen. Okay. So here's what I said. I said, I'm going to put out my proposal for an extended season, but I prefaced it by saying we're in that magical time of year where for me, family and football are often butting heads.
Right.
And often conflicting. So this is all about me.
Yes.
From Thanksgiving through like a week or two after New Year, we pause so that I can, you know, do what I have to do as a family guy. That's all. That's the only reason. The entire NFL just pauses for Brent Allen.
So this falls into the Buccaneers free tickets. I want them in club and FedEx. Where the hell's my package? Does that fall into sort of that?
This falls into FedEx. Where the hell's my package? Because you told me it was going to be here. No, but this was more of a joke. This was very tongue in cheek when I put it out there. But then people started asking the like, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this?
I
was like, exactly, and I'm like, well,
instead of just being like, dude, I'm just like, you know, I'm just being flippant.
Right.
You took it seriously. Like, oh, well, then.
Well, no, because it got my brain turning of like, well, what would you do with it? And honestly, at the end of the day, they'll figure it all out. I'm not worried about it. But the idea was play 10 games from September through Thanksgiving, take like a 4 or 6 week break, like an super extended bye week, and then play another 10 games from like mid-February to mid to like the end of April, and then make playoffs in May, which as a football fan, because we all know, like, this is the thing, Ren, you and I were just talking about it, like, it was the last episode or something. We're like, we've only got like 2 weeks left.
Yeah.
And then we're just into like the nothingness of football. Not the nothingness. We'll still have plenty of shows, but like, football's gone from our lives. Like, I want more football. I would like to have this longer. And, you know, the NFL proposed adding two more games to the schedule, but like, players are only allowed to play 16 games. And, you know, like, they're trying to do all this stuff. And I'm like, well, let's send it up to 20. Let's give them an extended break in the middle. But the other side is, you know, you get to the offseason, and what do you start hearing, at least from the guys who love football? Why do we have to wait so long? Let's get back out at it. Let's get going. Like, the offseason is really just too long, in my opinion. It really is. So anyway, it was not a serious proposal. Although if somebody wants to look at it and work at it and use it as a base, I just say go for it because it'd be awesome. But
so basically,
anyway,
you just want to turn the football season into like a primetime network TV show.
Yeah. I mean, like, they could have their own network. We'll call it the National Football Network. Yeah. The NFL Network. That'll work. You know, they can have their own Sirius XM channels. Maybe we could do some sort of on-demand thing. You know,
what about something where it jumps from game to game in scoring situations called the red zone?
I don't know. I don't like the name Red Zone.
No.
No.
Green Zone, Score Zone.
Yeah, I don't. We can workshop that one later. We'll workshop Bucks that.
Zone.
But anyway, why did I bring all this up? I've totally forget.
Danger Zone.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a point in bringing this up, and I don't remember what it is. It doesn't matter. But
oh, anyway, you were talking about how, yeah, this you're changing. I don't know. Yeah, I don't remember either.
Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, it was a fun discussion. If anybody wants to tell me how crazy I am for that or see the full plan of what the NFL year calendar year would look like, feel free to go back in the PewterCast Twitter feed and discover that. But, Ren, I want to go ahead and just wrap up this show, man. I think we've gone off the rails enough. We've got another show coming out here, guys, for you in just a couple of days. That's going to be our inbox show. We've got some Apple Podcast reviews we're going to read. We got a couple new ones this week, Ren. We've got some emails from our fellow listeners out there who are, you know, chiming in with their final thoughts, maybe some people who didn't get to call in during the instant cast. So you guys be on the lookout for that. And then obviously we'll have our Buck in the News show, maybe coming out a day early. I'm still not sure what the schedule this week looks like. I haven't been able to find it. I was looking for it. I couldn't find it. But it may come out a day early, may not. I don't know. But the game is Saturday, not Sunday. So we'll see what we've got going on there. So you guys stay on the lookout for that. But Ren, why don't you tell the folks where they can find you on the internet?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at Rendax. That's R-E-N underscore D-A-X-T. I'm always down to talk Buccaneers football. But if you don't want to put your opinion out there in the Twitter sphere or put it on blast because it's controversial, feel free to slide into my DMs and we can talk Buccaneers football there as well too.
And if you guys want to get in touch with me, you can find me at Brent Allen Live across all the social medias. And the show is at The PewterCast on Twitter and on Facebook. And the email address is thepewtercast@gmail.com. You send us in something, we'll read it on an upcoming episode of The PewterCast. Guys, like I said, we'll be back in just a day or so with our inbox show, so be on the lookout for that. And until next time, guys, go Bucks!